the bit.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Houston, this is the SS Salty Rocket. Are we clear for takeoff?
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have liftoff.
The following program is a show intended for an adult audience. Our discussions are of a sexual nature and may contain coarse language and references to drugs.
You're with Trouble. Dean Beck on Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9.
It's your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Dr. Lauren Rose Warren is my co-host and it is my great pleasure to welcome to Hide and Seek a very sexy woman who has been here before. We know her as Chantelle Austin. Welcome.
Hello. It's nice to be back.
It's great to have you back.
Hello. Hello.
You're our resident relationships guru for some time there last year.
Yeah.
But you're here for a very special reason tonight. And it's no mean feat to come out in any way, shape or form.
Mm.
We saw Magda do it recently.
I know. How cool was that?
That was pretty cool. The clip of her on stage at Mardi Gras addressing the 15,000 people there is worth watching. It's only a couple of minutes, but it is just beautiful. She is clearly emotionally moved by the experience, which is interesting, I find. Dr. Lauren Rose Warren, you might want to comment on this. Why is it that we're accepting of women coming out in that space, and yet if we see a sportsman come out like Daniel Kowalski mid-career, he gets crapped on from a great height from some of us queens?
I think the male, there's a whole lot more stigma about the man coming out because there's an expectation that he carried baggage that he could have actually been a really positive role model had he done so earlier. A woman coming out, potentially there's less, because Magda wasn't necessarily a heterosexual icon in any respect. You know, a lot of people assumed she was gay even if they didn't know already. So I think the impact of her coming out, there was less why didn't she come out as a role model earlier in the same way that I think does affect men, particularly young men.
Fair point. But really, this is all about you, Missy.
Yes,
what are you coming out as? Because, I mean, we already know that you like to swing a little.
Yes, that's true, and I might be a little bit on the bi side, so that's no secret either.
No.
But the big secret is that Chantelle Austin's not my real name. Shock horror.
Oh. Now, this is interesting because you've created for yourself a persona in a realm that you have chosen to create a career in.
I know. Isn't it funny how that worked out?
And now you're upending the whole basket.
Well, I am and I'm not. What I'm doing is I'm transitioning into a broader context, if you like. So while Chantelle, or being Chantelle, I've been focused on swinging and swinging relationships.
And writing books.
And writing books
making appearances.
That and sex and sexuality and everything that was involved in that. I am now stepping out as myself as an expert in open relationships. So it's not just swinging. It's about anything that's non-traditional and non-monogamous.
So it's polyamory.
Yes.
Yeah.
Polly is one of them. I've got a business partner who has come from more of a poly space. He's also got experience in the kink scene as well. So he sort of covers those two aspects and I cover the swing and the and open and to some extent poly myself as well.
Why the rebrand?
I guess because the biggest thing for me was that I'm out there telling people to accept who they are and to be proud of who they are and be proud of their choices, you know, and the things that aren't a choice. But their lifestyle and their love style. So for me to be able to do that in the full context of what I can, I've felt the need to be out there doing it as me, not just as Chantelle.
It's an authenticity thing.
It's very much an authenticity thing. So leading by example.
So do you actually get rid of the pseudonym, if you like, and completely embrace the you coming out? Or do we have dual identity? Is there one identity that's going to be useful in one circumstance?
I think
it's going to take some time to transition over fully,
yep,
because Chantel is already known. Been out in the media last year quite a bit, and there's quite a big following for Chantel, the website and everything that links back to that. So it's going to take some time for that momentum to shift across.
Which begs the question of really this moment, do you really think that that authenticity aspect of this outweighs that confusion, if you like, amongst a following base? Or?
Yeah, I think so. And it, you know what? Personally, for me, it was important that I was being truly authentic and in alignment with who I am, and not being, while I haven't hidden it exactly, I haven't been open out there saying, you know what, this is me, this is who I am. It's been somewhat of an easier journey because I've had Chantel.
Yeah, it's got to come from a space where everything else fits into place, doesn't it? It's got to come from that foundation so that you can get up in front of 500, 1,000 people, if need be, and speak from a space of truth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I'd started Chantel, or had Chantel, because at the beginning of all this, I wasn't sure how people would go with it. And eventually I put my face to the name because it started off as a caricature. And it sort of grew from there to the point where it sort of took on a life of its own, so to speak. But there was still that part of me that was going, yeah, but I don't feel 100% in alignment with it because I'm not being all of me.
Which comes back to Dean's point, mentioning earlier the Magda coming out, which is very much, I think, a similar journey. She never hid herself. You know, she didn't feel that this was necessarily her being a deceitful identity, that she was out to her friends, to her close. But this idea of actually then transitioning to the public outing, the public identity, that this is now the full, authentic me, that there's nothing that's not up front, that was part of the journey only when she felt that there was a safe space to
safe
do that.
Safe space, that's exactly what it is. And I think it's not necessarily a safe space. It's when you as a person get to that point of accepting who you are, and it doesn't matter what other people think anymore. When you get to that space, then you can really stand in the strength of who you are and be able to lead other people in the same direction.
The sex advice columnist Dan Savage was recently asked what was the worst piece of advice he had ever given someone. Let's have a listen to this. It's kind of relevant.
You know, early on when I started writing the column, it was a joke. I was going to be the gay advice columnist who was as rude to straight people as straight advice columnists always had been to gay people. And it was just a gag. And straight people really responded to that kind of contemptuous treatment and started sending me real letters. And suddenly I had to answer real questions from real people. And I didn't know jack shit about particularly women's bodies, because I stopped paying attention once I realized I wouldn't, that was a country I was never going to visit. I didn't need the Bedeckers, you know? And so, you know, I didn't know how the clit worked, and I gave lousy advice about getting women off that got me yelled at. I think the worst and perhaps most damaging advice I ever gave was to Jake Shears, who I met when he was 15 years old, and he asked me if he should come out to his parents, and he described, you know, what was going on and who they were and what, you know, what he thought they might know. And after he told me everything, I was like, oh, they know. They're just waiting for you to tell them. You should tell them. Just come out to them. They're waiting. They're ready. And he came out to them, and they didn't know, and it was a big disaster. And they threatened to pull him out of school, and they were, you know, really angry. And so he called me. I had a radio show then. He called me, and I got him off the air and got his mother's phone number and called my mother and gave my mother Jake's mother's phone number and had my mom call his mom and yell at her. And it helped. But, yeah, I gave him some really shitty advice. And that is really shitty advice. There's a lot of bad advice for gay middle schoolers and high schoolers out there, telling them that they should just come out. And not everybody's in a position where that's wise or safe. And we have to tell these gay teenagers to take a cold, hard look at who their families are and where they live before they take that step. Most of the bully gay kids are kids who can't hide and can't pass for straight. And gay adults need to be careful about telling, as I was not at that moment, telling 15-year-olds to come out. Something like 40% of homeless teenagers are gay and lesbian teenagers who've been thrown out of the house when they were outed or came out. And unless we're willing to take, as a community, financial responsibility for these kids who get thrown out, we just can't glibly tell middle schoolers that they have a responsibility to come out in middle school and make it better for themselves it really is going to imperil their lives and their futures to do that. You have to come out from a position of strength, and you have some security. And I get grief because I tell kids who are in college, whose parents are paying for college, who would cut them off to wait Wait till the last check clears in your senior year and then come out.
Yeah.
That said, you can sometimes gay people will underestimate their families because they want to justify their own cowardice. Some people don't come out to their families when they could, and their families would be supportive. And the gay person is just afraid, and they inflate, they exaggerate their family's homophobia in a self-serving way as an excuse never to come out. When I meet a 30-year-old who's not out to their family, it's always that their family is so homophobic. And really what's going on there is that that gay person is a chicken shit and a coward. And so they make their families out to be these monsters that they're not necessarily. And so they don't ever have to like live with some integrity and honesty and ethics. And I have no sympathy for those people.
That's Dan Savage on Big Think, which is an online YouTube ripoff of Big Ideas from ABC, or maybe it was the other way around. I don't know which one came first, but it's but these little postings of sort of thoughts and questions, and I thought that was a relevant one to play because you would have had to have gone, Rachel. You would have had to have gone through a lot of thought processes before deciding to ditch Chantel. Surely, I mean, yeah. It's no mean feat to come out in any sense.
No, well, I had to consider my family, the children, my husband, and the impact around that. And
absolutely,
I think being able to have Chantel there as a name was able to just sort of shield some of that and be able to give me the confidence to go, okay, well, I'll just dip my toes in there and just see how that goes. No truck. Hmm. Okay, maybe I can go a little bit further, which is basically how the journey's gone. So the last sort of step, having been in the media with my face everywhere, in magazines that go national, just with a different name, there wasn't that much of a shield, if you like. So it was really just a mental barrier to say, well, am I really prepared to be out there as me and speak the words that I'm going to speak to help the people that I know I'm going to help without being worried about other people judging me, because they're going to.
Dr. Lauren Rose Warren, is Jermaine Greer a fake name?
That's a bit of a curveball question. I was actually thinking, though, while you were we're just sidelining, dodging that question completely.
Beautiful. Well done.
Forget you asked.
Correct.
If I'm co-hosting, I can completely tell you.
Absolutely, my love.
We're ignoring that question. I want to ask you whether there was a lightning bolt moment, whether there was something, whether it was a media event or something that made you think, okay, now, because I think Dan Savage's clip sort of highlights the issue with age, mm-hmm. and I think you're not 15, so you've overcome that. Teenage.
Yeah, I grew out of that
you
bit.
You grew out of that bit. But was there something that made you think now is the time? Or is it merely the journey?
I think it's been part of the journey. Yeah. There's been a couple of things that have happened in the last probably 6 months where I've felt a bit of conflict between having Chantel and being Rach. And the conflict didn't need to be there because I am both of those, that they're just parts of me. So as I started to get a grasp of that and go, what is it I'm really afraid of? Well, okay, so the judgment thing, what are people going to think? Well, I'm already out there. So there was just that conversation I had to have with myself, and I had some beautiful supportive friends that sort of pointed that out to me as well. God love them.
Is there anything in the alter ego, though, that you still right now don't think you're ready to embrace? Is there something that the luxury of a second identity gave you, a liberty that you're not sure yet whether you're ready for?
I think it did provide a level of shielding. Even though my face was on it, it still provided a level of shielding. Up until... What's going to happen now is that when you searched for Chantel Austin, you would never see a link to Rach.
Okay.
And if you search Rach, you would never see a link to Chantel Austin.
Yeah.
Well, that's about to change. So now if people search on either one of them, they're going to find me. That's been a case.
And all the ramifications that come with
that. That come with that. But I think now I'm much more solid in who I am, and I accept a lot of my journey and my purpose in this world.
Oh, you've got a lot of explaining to do, but we've got time. Coming up, we're going to explore monogamy, polyamory, and we're going to basically answer some of your questions if you have them. Get in contact with us. We have our special guest, Rach Wilson, and Dr. Lauren Rose Warren. They're here to help us guide us through those sticky situations with love and relationships and life, the universe and everything.
Hi, I am Francois Sagat, and you are listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
You certainly are. Dr. Lauren Rose Warne is my co-host and my special guest, Rach Wilson. Thank you so much for sharing with us this special moment, because I know that it was a big one, and I know we got in first. Ha!
Aren't you lucky?
Oh, yeah.
I just love that you've highlighted and circled my real name on your sheet so you get it right.
There's a bloody great big circle around it so that I stop calling you Chantel. Let's play a little Dan Savage. This is about why monogamy is so ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to rethink love and commitment. You know, 60 years ago was when we decided that men had to be monogamous too. Men were not monogamous. For all of recorded human history, men had concubines and whores. And 60 years ago, straight relationships began to become more egalitarian, and it was less of a property transaction. A marriage had been a property transaction for most recorded human history. And it became a union of two equals. And at that moment, instead of deciding to allow women to have the same sort of freedom and leeway that men did, we decided to let men have the same limitations, impose the same limitations that women had. And we put monogamous sexual commitment at the heart of all relationships, all long-term commitments, all marriages. And we have watched, we should now be able to recognize the consequences of that, which are a lot of short-term relationships, a lot of divorce, because monogamy is ridiculous and people aren't any good at it. We're not wired for it. We didn't evolve to be. It's not natural. And it places a tremendous strain on our marriages. And our long-term commitments, to expect them to be effortlessly monogamous. Because what we've said is, if you're in love, you won't want to have sex with anybody else. And what we need to tell people is that if you're in love, you can make a monogamous commitment and you will refrain from having sex with other people, but you will still desperately want to fuck the shit out of other people. But people understand love means I don't want to fuck other people because of these misconceptions pumped into people's heads about romance and love and what it means. And so they meet somebody else that they're attracted to, and they're attracted to this other person. They go, well, I must not be in love with my partner anymore, otherwise I wouldn't be attracted to this person. Or they feel threatened when their partners are attracted to other people, as if, you know, it makes them feel insecure. And we just need to get past that. And we talk about monogamy the way we talk about virginity, that, you know, you're monogamous until you fuck somebody else, and then you're not, you ruined it. You popped your monogamy hymen and destroyed your monogamous relationship. We need to talk about monogamy the way we talk about sobriety, which you can be monogamous and fall off the wagon and then sober back up. You can monogamous back up and get back on the wagon. And the truth of the matter is that if you're with somebody for 40, 50 years and they only cheated on you a few times, they were good at being monogamous. Not bad at being monogamous. They were good at it. So I do think there needs to be some leeway. And a lot of really good, loving relationships are destroyed because somebody wants a little variety or isn't getting a need met and feels they have to step out, and then explodes the relationship. I'm conservative. I think that we should do what we can to preserve marriages and long-term relationships. And one way to do that is to encourage people to have more realistic attitudes about sexual exclusivity.
That is the Big Think vodcast on YouTube of Dan Savage, suggesting that monogamy is a waste of time. Dr. Lauren Rose Warne.
So I'm fascinated by that clip because on one hand it does tap into an evolving idea of sexuality and an evolving idea of what we conceptualize as relationships to be. I do have some reservations about his idea of getting past the idea of jealousy and getting past the idea that one of our partners cheats on us, because I think it assumes everybody in relationships, but even just those two people in the relationship, are both on the same wavelength in terms of let's evolve the relationship at the same time. If one wants to do so more than the other, I think one partner is disadvantaged. So I think this opening up of relationships assumes that both people are exactly on the same wavelength at the same time, else there's problems.
I'm so glad we've got Rach Wilson here with us.
Here's one we prepared earlier.
Yes, indeed. This has got to be an issue for people when one partner wants to open it up and the other perhaps has got no comprehension that this is even on the card.
Yeah, look, that happens a lot. And even when they do start walking down this path, there's usually one partner that is far more open and comfortable with it than the other. Mm. And I see that time and time again. And it's not an easy one to get past, but it's doable. But what it comes back to usually is that you've got to deal with that person and their insecurity insecurities within themselves. You've got to deal with them and their self-esteem stuff, their lack of self-love stuff, whatever happens to be causing that feeling of, well, no, I need them to love me and be the only person in their life. So when you deal with that kind of that level, then you bring them up to a level that can be open to opening up the relationship and be okay with, okay, well, let's take the next little baby step. As long as it's not full, you know, okay, I expect you to be where I'm at and let's go into that. That's just going to ruin it. It's not going to work. But if the person who's more open to it is willing to take a slower road and to do the work with that person, support them while they do this journey on their own, then they're opening up the door to creating trust and a bond to be able to step that forward into an open relationship at a later date.
I'd agree with the doable part. I think that that's obviously, it's possible to make this work. I'm just wondering about the partner that gets manipulated into this situation because they feel if they don't jump on board, he or she's going to leave me. So that I have to go on this journey that I actually don't want to be a part of because some of him or her is better than none, that I'd rather put up with what I'm actually seeing as betrayal, but now we're going to call it an open relationship.
When you say go on this journey, you also mean even sometimes to the point of just letting...
Yes.
Letting go.
Yes.
Not physically having to go with them on the journey, but allowing them to do their thing.
Yeah, in which case you're actually putting up with potentially what you might consider suboptimal treatment based on a preserving of the relationship.
But Lauren, ownership and possession is not love.
It may not be love, but in practice, that idea is trying to dilute human nature or inclinations that people have about a lifetime
human
of being...
Human nature or societal expectation?
Yeah, probably societal expectation. Or both. I think conditioning actually is probably a good way to think about it. A lifetime of thinking that partnering up, that the dyad is the way to go, that two people forever, and that if suddenly one of them wants something different, this requires a rethinking of everything, and you may not be ready for it.
Once upon a time, we only had one job for life.
Yeah, well.
Hello, Mama. Dr. Lauren Rose Warne and Rach Wilson is here. We're exploring open relationships. This message has come through from Brad at St Kilda, and that was sent through on 0427569949, our SMS. The theory of opening up a relationship is great, but what about when two people enter into an open relationship at the very onset? It's discussed and agreed, and then at a later stage, one person wants to decide that they don't want that anymore. It has to end, or is the relationship over?
It depends on the people in the relationship. Sometimes the other person is actually okay with it being monogamous, and sometimes it's just monogamous for a while. It may not be forever, but it can also be an indicator that something's going on for that person specifically. So I'd want to know why they want to go monogamous.
Can you quite happily sit on the couch whilst the other partner goes off, once a fortnight and disappears for a couple of hours and returns and all's well with the world?
Certainly a lot of people can.
Right.
And theoretically that really does match with this idea of evolving sexuality and the acceptance that two people are going to have different sex drives and different wants and needs in a relationship. So I think it makes intellectual sense, whether in practice actually sitting on that couch while your partner's off enjoying nocturnal recreation with another person, that might hurt. I think you could psychologically think it's okay, but I don't necessarily think that it's always going to be okay, even if your sex drive isn't as high.
This message has come through. I'm loving these messages. Thank you very much. Why is it that the LGBTI community are so intent on pushing for marriage rights if they are not wanting a monogamous relationship? Does this not make a mockery of the marriage, which is why some people are saying they don't support it? I don't think so.
I love this question. I love it. I love it because marriage is a rights act. It's the right to get married, but there's plenty of heterosexual people who don't want to get married and don't.
There's plenty of heterosexual people that are married that root around.
Yeah. And the idea, though, that...
Hands go up.
I know. Two hands in the air right here. I think, for me, marriage is just a personal commitment to that person, whatever the commitment is. And that's something that you can discuss between the two of you. But at least have the right to be able to make that personal commitment. I think that's the key.
And this message infers that all gay people actually are non-monogamous. And I think that's also a misnomer. Lots of gay people want to be in monogamous relationships and that they like that safety that marriage offers. And I don't think that they're mutually exclusive.
And physicality, expressing one's sexual desires, has got nothing to do with love.
And it's also got nothing to do with marriage. Plenty of marriages without a whole lot of screwing. So,
Correct. This one has come through on 0427569949. If societal norms have changed, why don't we have fixed rate marriage contracts of 10 years to be renegotiated after that time to include open relationships? It would save a couple of messy divorces if things went wrong later on. Well, that's very structured, isn't it?
I don't think I'd want to commit to 10 years. I like having this day-by-day thing that I've got going on.
The flip side is the US system, where you've actually got some religious, highly religious conservatives who are pushing to actually make it harder to leave marriages. They've got this thing called the covenant marriage in wonderful states like Arkansas, which you actually go into the relationship and it's almost impossible to get out. Right. And these are couples who are entering in thinking, this is going to last forever. We don't want the luxury of being able to easily exit.
Good point. One more little grab from Big Think from YouTube. Dr. Laurie Santos explains why all humans are naturally polygamist.
The human reproductive system is one that we don't really have a great grasp on, because in some sense we pair bond for the most part, but across all human cultures there's really a push to polygyny. So in most human cultures there are at least some males who take on multiple mates and have multiple mating partners, but not nearly to the degree that you see in chimpanzees. The way you can tell this morphologically is by the size of the testes relative to body size. So chimpanzee testicles relative to body size are just like enormous. You know, you'd blush to see the size of these things. Not nearly the same ratio as you see in humans. However, humans have a larger testicle to body size ratio than what you might see in other primates, where we know the females don't kind of sleep around, like is the case in gorillas. So the human mating system is kind of somewhere in between. We're sort of pair bonded. There's this push to polygyny. So there's a push of, you know, males taking on multiple female partners. But there also seems to be a push towards polyandry. In other words, females taking on multiple male partners, or else why would males kind of grow these big testicles to kind of compete at the level of sperm. So we're this funny puzzle. In terms of why humans might pair bond, one of the pushes towards pair bonding in the animal kingdom has to do with the kind of size and cumbersomeness of your offspring. So the taxa where you see the most pair bonding is in birds. You can see this in kind of the standard sort of march of the penguins, of the two parents that have to, you know, sort of very cutely take care of the kids. But it's true in birds because the offspring actually require a lot of work. They're this extremely fragile egg, you know, that's very tasty, and you have to defend it from predators and so on. And it actually requires both parents to actually incubate the egg, you know, protect it and so on. The idea is the same might be true of humans. You know, human infants are born incredibly prosocial, precocial. So human infants are born incredibly precocial, much more so than, you know, are their close primate relatives. You know, they're pretty fragile. You know, if you just left a human baby newborn there for a long time, you know, it wouldn't do so well. The thought is maybe this human pair bonding actually came as a result of the fragileness of human infants, you know, in that it might require two parents to actually take care of these offspring. But again, you know, there are a lot of just so stories out there. You know, it's really hard to figure out exactly why we have the reproductive system we have. It's a complicated one that we can't pin down. You know, the sad thing that I mentioned in my course is that we know much more about the reproductive systems of pipefish and, you know, swans and lions than we do about our own species, which is kind of pathetic.
Kind of pathetic, Dr. Lauren Rosewarne.
I've got a problem with these kind of chimpanzee arguments about anything personally.
Great big pendulous nuts.
Yeah, forgetting all of the amazing sized testicles that will make us blush. I'm pretty sure I have never blushed. But anyway, this idea that we can think back to what things, you know, this biological argument, my problem is that there's lots of things that get justified as biological, rape being a good example, that make me really uncomfortable. So I think
biological rape,
the idea that men are somehow programmed to find it difficult to resist their urges, right? So my problem with this line of argument is we can't...
It's a bit of a self-serving argument,
yeah,
isn't it?
We can't pick and choose which we're taking from the chimpanzees and which we're... Oh, actually, sorry, the iPod. That's important that I keep that.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Whatever reasons we want to defend polyamory, that's okay. We're not using I'm not using the biological argument, though. And the testicle size and the offspring size. Outrageous.
But there's other... You were explaining off-air to me that you can basically use any scientific analysis to justify polyamory.
Absolutely, but you can also use biology and the earth science or the animal sciences to justify anything as well, as well as to as the opposite argument. This is what academics do. We all do this. I just personally have some reservations of doing it in matters of sexuality because we can't suddenly say we're so evolved that we wouldn't do some of this outrageous behaviour that goes on in the animal kingdom.
There's a bloody good need to root, I can tell you that.
Yeah, and I think that fighting that urges might be unnatural for a lot of personalities, which would beg the question of, well, why go into a monogamous relationship in the first place? If you're the kind of person who wants to root around, fine, but don't embroil other people into this under the guise of monogamy. I think that's where trouble and betrayal starts.
Yeah. And most guys don't walk down King Street and belt each other over the head for the next woman.
Or
most,
drag women. Most. Yeah, some footballers do, but most of them don't. Dragging women by the hair into the cave. We're not going to accept, you know, this. Okay, well, if we're not going to accept that, we can't then pick and choose what we're taking from the animals.
We've had a message come through saying, thank you for the response earlier. That was what Tony Abbott proposed in the last round in Parliament about marriages. Misogynistic tendencies there. I'm assuming that you're saying open relationships are okay for adults, but it's not okay if those adults have children, surely. Rach, would you like to inform our listener?
I don't see a reason why it wouldn't be okay for people who have children because...
How do you justify that?
Well, my children specifically, they know we're in a relationship that is non-monogamous and open.
And loving.
And loving. And that's what they see. That's their example of how a successful relationship can go. It also means that they can look at other people in their relationships or sexualities and not judge them. Because for them, all of these are acceptable. There's nothing wrong with them. And when they get to become an adult, that means that they then have the choice as to what kind of relationship they're going to be in, rather than feeling like they have to be monogamous, they have to be something else. Because what we're teaching them is to be open-minded and to be able to make choices for themselves based on what's right for them.
And I presume there's quite a bit of communication that goes with that,
there
which
is a lot
has got to be a good thing.
That's what I think.
And I think our most high-profile polyamorous, Tilda Swinton, she has children and she makes this work. Jenny Block's memoir, Open, talks about this juggling of children and it requires extensive negotiation and communication, but it's certainly not impossible.
Joy.
Rach Wilson and Dr. Lauren Rose Warne are with us. We've had a great message come through from Kevin from Cubby House here on Joy 94.9. Kevin writes, why is there this idea that you have to set all these rules to minimise the risk of jealousy or something going wrong in a relationship? Shouldn't it be more important to focus on setting up decent lines of communication instead so that you can react appropriately when things do go wrong?
Aren't we risk adverse though? When you go into a relationship, you want ideally for
aren't
it
rules
to work.
Meant to be broken?
Depends if your relationship is one that's driven by that desire, which might be more your relationship's Dean. But some couples potentially want it actually the goal is to make it work. And that goal to make it work is mitigating risk. So I think that might be prioritised over above communication. I don't necessarily think that's a good thing, but it might be what happens in practice.
I'm a bit with Kevin on this one, I think, which is scaring me a little. Rachel, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think the guidelines just gives people a place base that they know where the boundaries are, which is good. I think that's a good thing. Communication lines, effective communication strategies, brilliant. It helps to minimise any misunderstandings. But I think the key to being able to react accordingly comes back to their personal stuff, their emotional baggage. That's what creates an overreaction in a lot of cases. You can have the best strategies in the world, but if you don't have the emotional capacity or strength in that space, then you're going to overreact.
Some people seem to be born with a real big dose of jealousy.
Like born or they learn it?
That's I'm
just teasing.
I don't know. I have never experienced the sensation. In fact, it wasn't until much later in my teens that I actually understood what it was because I didn't get it. I'm not a jealous person. I don't get that sort of... Is it envy or is it hatred? Is it... Is it anger?
It's potentially possession in that sense of the idea that you found somebody that you love, and the idea that love is shown through 100% commitment to one person. Now, this then starts to look like possession and starts to look complicated, but for some people, that's actually a really desirable position to be. It feels like a safe space, that the idea of other people entering that, that somehow takes away from that space. I think, though, one thing to think about in these kind of conversations is this concept of love and it not being a scarce resource. So the idea is that I don't have a finite amount that I can love, that there's actually more, that it can keep growing. And this is often something people find difficult to get their heads around.
Rach, you're going to be forging a career further in this realm. Mm-hmm. And you've got a new website set up. Tell us a little bit about what it is that you're hoping to do with your newfound career. Well, your old found name and your
newfound direction, shall we call it. Yeah. Look, my ultimate aim is to be out there helping people who are in non-monogamous and open relationships to be able to walk down this path in the best way possible for everybody involved, but also for those people who've just sort of stumbled across it or have fallen into it, so that they don't fall into the same potholes that maybe I have or other people that I've known have. Teaching along the way, acceptance, being open-minded, helping people to get rid of or dump their what I call love junk, so they can feel more like strength and freer to be able to love to the capacity that I know we can.
You can't fill something up that's full of crap. So empty the crap so you've got space to fill.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's the large key. And I don't believe that everybody can be non-monogamous. I certainly think there are some people that are well-suited to monogamy. But there are plenty of relationship coaches and counsellors and psychotherapists and everything out there that help with that level. There's not as many people out there who help with open relationships that not only have the professional experience but have the personal experience. So I've walked the road, fallen over, picked themselves back up again, all of that side of things. So that's pretty much what I'm bringing into it, and to be able to help those people that I feel have not necessarily got all the resources or the education, at least not publicly.
RelationshipsEvolved.com is the website. We'll be back to find out a little bit more about a particular online course coming up very shortly. But Dr. Lauren Rose Warne, you've got your own little website too. And you've written a couple of books.
I have, but I don't offer any counselling services yet.
No, just some kinky shit going on there. What's that
about?
That's
just a sideline. No. This is my bread and butter. This is my area of research. So I look at how people integrate all kinds of non-mainstream sexual behaviour into their daily life. I argue that we're all perverts, but in different degrees.
We'll be back to say goodbye shortly.
I'd agree with that. Yeah.
There you go. You're with Dean Beck, Dr. Lauren Rose Warne, Rach Wilson. This is Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Tracy Bartram, and you're listening to Hide and Seek, where they talk about bits and sex, but they didn't discuss that with me at all, probably because I'm too old. It's Joy 94.9.
Hide and Seek.
Brought to you by the Laird Hotel.
Hard and strong for over 30 years. LairdHotel.com.
You're with Dean Beck.
Right around the nation.
On Hide and Seek.
Touching our community.
Melbourne's biggest gay voice. Joy 94.9.
And it's just about to say goodbye. And I've got to say a big thank you to my co-host, Dr. Lauren Rose Warne.
Thank you for having me.
And to my newly out relationships expert, Rach Wilson. Thank you, my dear.
Anytime.
And lovely to see you again. Keep us up to date with all of your goings on. We were going to touch on your little online workshop. Tell us quickly about that.
The online course will be coming up in a couple of weeks, and it's the 7 keys to a thriving open relationship. But if you go to the website now, if you put your email address in, you can get the PDF version of the Ethical Guide to Non-Monogamy and Why Cheating Sucks. And in a few days, there'll be a free video that comes out, which is the Can I say the full word?
Yes.
Yep. The no bullshit and uncensored approach to opening your relationship.
Love it. Rach Wilson, thank you very much. Dr. Lauren Rose Warne, thank you very much. Thank you, too, to all of the listeners who put in such a great effort with responses tonight. Love it. Thank you. I'm Dean Beck. Follow me on Twitter, Dean Beck on Air. You can catch The Apprentice and I next week on Hide and Seek. Till then, you keep well. Take care. Bye for
now. Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Kylie Minogue, also known as Kylie from Camberwell.
Hey, it's Richard Reed.
Hey, this is Winter Gordon.
Hi, Matt Preston from MasterChef.
What's up, party people? It's the legendary DJ Spin.
Fiorella.
Hey there, I'm Adam Lambert.
Hello, this is Kate Sobrano.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm Alexandra Burke.
This is Katie Noonan.
Hi, this is Francois Sagatz.
Hello, this is Katie Lang.
G'day, I'm Barry Bissell.
Hello, this is Tina Arena.
Hi, this is Paris Wells.
Hi, I'm Cindy Lauper.
Hi, this is Tim Campbell.
Hi, this is Sear.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Morosi.
Hey, I'm Darren Hayes.
Hi, I'm Jade Leonard.
Hi, I'm Shaka Khan.
Hi, this is Kathy Freeman.
Hi, I'm Daniel Kowalski.
Hey, this is Jane Lynch, and you're listening to Australia's gay and lesbian radio station.
Hey, everybody, this is Chris Willis. Put your hands up for Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station.
All night and day long, Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9. That was my best radio voice.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.